Hello, testing. Yes, we are now recording, correct? Did you guys hear the British lady,
Steve? This call is being recorded.
Yes, that means we are recording. Welcome to Objection. Robot leader Contrane Holry. I am Judge David Johnson, joined by Judge Dan Mancini. We had some technical
things. Hello there.
Our little recording software is always preambled by this lovely sounding British nanny type. Perhaps it's Mrs. Featherbottom from Arrested Development. I don't know. Perhaps it is. Perhaps it isn't. But we weren't hearing her, so we were very relieved to hear her introduce us. And we are recording. So after several failed attempts, we've been fighting against technology, but the omnipresence of the old white man cabal bails us out once again. So
yes.
So again, this is Objection. We are in the middle of counting down our top 20 action movies as loathed by Prius enthusiasts, and I will hand it over to my a-hole colleague Dan Mancini to kind of give a quick summation of what that means. What kind of action movie is detested by a Prius enthusiast as so broadly defined by us?
Right, based on our stereotyping of Prius enthusiasts, they would, number one, they would probably have a ponytail.
Yes.
And
Steven Seagal had a ponytail.
That's true. They eat lots of granola, and they would not like a movie that had kind of overt depictions of masculinity. Active male heroes who take it to the villains.
Willing to do violence when called upon.
Right. Unapologetically.
Yep. No nuance, no kind of gray area.
Feeling bad.
Yes.
Commit violent acts.
So if like if the final bad guy is attacking our hero with a staple gun, instead of just stepping out of the way and letting the final bad guy electrocute himself or something, he'll turn the staple gun on him and then just staple him to oblivion or something. He will take the fight to the bad guy.
Exactly. He's not afraid to use a staple gun, nail gun, whatever it takes.
Gun is the operative word there, apparently.
Right, and revenge is not outside of his code of
that's true
of conduct that's either. True. What else? Movies that don't make up fake countries.
Yeah, they don't sugarcoat realities. Perhaps sugarcoat history, realities, belief systems, whatnot. It's just straight shooting and something that goes against maybe the typical flow of a Hollywood mainstream action movie.
Right. It would be a movie that doesn't say, let's not name current enemies.
That's
that would be culturally insensitive.
Yes.
Let's just make neo-Nazis the bad guys. Or let's make the CIA the bad guys.
That's right. Or we'll make up a whole new country, like the Kyrgyzstanis are behind this,
Right.
We've said it's more art than science. You know these movies when you see them. So we've just been going through the 20 or so we think would really tick off, the namby-pamby action movie lover, meaning the lover of namby-pamby action movies.
Right.
So we're at the home stretch with the top 10 where it's about to get real, yo. And, we're at numbers, 8 and 7.
Correct.
And I guess you want to just kind of recount the previous 12 we've done?
Absolutely.
All right.
I've got my list right here. Number 20 was Banded Brothers.
Very good.
A fine miniseries. Number 19 was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
A slap shot to multicultural handholdingism.
Yes, definitely. 18 was the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
17 was Commando.
Of course. That goes without saying.
Yes.
When you get saw blades in the face that of a drug cartel soldier, that's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. Trashing malls, that sort of thing. 16 was Black Dynamite.
Excellent.
15 was True Lies.
We don't want to let the third person sitting with us hear this, but it is the last good movie James Cameron made. Continue.
Yes, yeah. 14 was License to Kill.
Of course. Feeding drug dealers through cocaine grinders, excellent.
Yes, T-Doll as Bond.
T-Doll bringing it.
Yeah, awesome. 13 was Apocalypto.
One of my favorites of the last 10 years or so.
Yes, yeah. 12 was the super testosterone action picture, action western Tombstone.
That's right.
Which has more facial hair.
Yes.
Than any other movie ever made.
The worldwide leader in facial hair, for sure.
Yes. 11 was The Expendables.
A very, very recent, probably, I think, the most recent addition to this list.
Right. And was really, you know,
near flawless.
Made up country.
Yes.
Made up country away from making the top five.
And a CIA puppet master away, right.
Yeah, yeah. 10 was Team America. And 9 was The Incredibles.
All right, so here we go. 8 through, and we, as we said last week, The Incredibles, that marks the last movie that's probably appropriate to watch with your 8-year-old or so. So the movies going forward here are going to be, you know, pretty badass, and we're not going to shy away from that. And speaking of not being shy, let's bring our favorite Canadian badass, Steve Power. Steve, welcome.
Yo, how's it going?
Not too bad. That was a very nice.
That was a Stallone. Stallone. Yo,
you got to bring it. Yeah. Yo.
I was going to do Liam Neeson and say, you know, like, stop bashing James Cameron and that'll be the end of it. But if you don't,
that's not gonna happen.
A particular set of skills that makes me a nightmare for people like you.
Well, you know what? You just gave us a great segue. You gave us a great segue to get into our eighth movie. So we'll get right to it because you said it. And it is the Liam Neeson-fronted overseas action import that Luc Besson produced. And the guy produces like 12 movies a year. But Taken, which was actually made several years ago, but only recently, you know, came stateside. And for my money, one of the best straight action movies in a long time. I know, gentlemen, what say you? Steve, since you're our guest, what are your thoughts on Taken?
I know the first time I saw Taken, I was actually kind of a little disappointed with it. I was expecting, I mean, the first trailers that came out, all you got was the, you know, the telephone conversation.
That's true.
Let her go and that'll be the end of it. And you know, it kind of gave me a Man on Fire vibe, which is another just badass movie. But
too bad Tony Scott hurts my brain with his cinematography.
But yeah, you know, like I was kind of expecting along those lines. I was expecting this really driven, you know, intense kind of revenge movie. But once it got rolling, I got something more along the lines of, like, you know, The Transporter. So it was kind of, the first time I saw it, it was a little bit of a, this really isn't what I signed up for. But when it came out on video, of course, I sat down and watched it again. And yeah, you know, I mean, Liam Neeson is, the whole movie is Liam Neeson. You know, it without him, it would be a pointless exercise. It would just be another, you know, they'd probably have Jason Statham in there or something. And then it'd just be, you know, like every other Jason Statham movie in existence. But Neeson brings it, man. He's the reason to watch that movie. And it kind of, you know, it made Neeson cool again, I think. You know?
Talk about an out-of-nowhere performance, too. I mean, just the last kind of performance you'd expect from him.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we've been used to seeing him, I don't know about you guys, but I've been used to seeing him in
Love Actually.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. You know, like, he'd been doing a lot of dramas, a lot of, you know, even popping up every now and again in like a family comedy or something like that, you know? So I kind of thought of Neeson as maybe a little bit of an over the hill badass, you know, like maybe his earlier days, you know, were kind of, you know, the Rob Roy and Darkman was behind him, you know? And I mean, yeah, he's done some cool, like historical drama type of stuff, but he felt more like, you know, like one of those elder statesman dramatic actors. And then Taken comes along and it's just like, whoa, who is this guy?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, even in action movies, he'd been like the mentor guy.
Yeah, you know. Like,
that's
I mean,
true. Batman Begins,
Batman Begins or Kingdom of Heaven, he's here teaching Orlando Bloom how to sword fight, you know. And I mean, he was badass in Kingdom of Heaven.
Which is a task. I mean, if you can teach Orlando Bloom to sword fight, then you are badass.
Convincingly.
Or come across anything but kind of like a waify little elf man. So.
But, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. It was just, I think that's the whole reason I enjoyed a movie so much is just more for his performance. And, I mean, just that one moment, my favorite moment in it, when, you know, he walks into the room and the guy realizes who he is and it's like, oh snap, you know,
you were telling the truth.
the
dawn of realization. So, Dan, what about you?
My experience seeing it, I think I've only seen it the one time, was I sat there pretty much the whole movie consciously aware of the fact that the movie was manipulating in every imaginable way possible. I mean, white slavery, the whole, you know, the bad guys are so bad.
Oh, yeah.
That you just absolutely hate them and want to see revenge. And Yeah, I knew I was being manipulated, but I just didn't care. It was so satisfying to watch him tear through these dudes. Like, and like Steve was saying, that scene in the room with the realization is just, oh man, it's great. It's great. And the phone call is great because you know he's going to kick ass.
I mean, yeah, I really liked it just because it was so unapologetic. And I mean, because there's the buildup, and then once he goes over to France, it's just a nonstop slaughter fest. And it's a veritable United Nations of bad guys too. So, you know, you get the skeezy white Europeans, but then he's smoking Albanians, and finally he's taking out like the Immortals from 300 at the end there on the boat, remember? So he's taking like out of sight. So it's like, so everyone gets a piece of it. You know, all the bad guys, it's like a rainbow coalition of bad guys just getting smoked. It's just so straightforward, though, and refreshingly so. And what I thought was kind of, you know, kind of being familiar with what Hollywood's kind of been pumping out with its twisty movies and stuff, I was convinced that, like, his CIA buddies were behind it at some point. I was convinced.
You were just waiting for that.
I was waiting
for the
other
shoe to drop.
I was convinced that his buddy there, who, you know, got him that info, you know, was, oh, we're the ones who were behind this. Even though it would make no sense in the context of the movie, I'd been brainwashed enough by some of the half-assed mainstream action movies we've had to endure lately. This is going to be the goofy twist. But it's never like that. It's like a straightforward, it's almost like a video game, you know, for good or ill, but it's a straightforward where, you know, each guy is more detestable than the next, but it's not like his CIA pals behind it. So
that's the cool butter.
You know, that was, and he's a dad who wants to save his daughter, and anyone who hurt his daughter is going to die horribly. And they do. They, you know, every single one. Yeah. I mean, the guy who gets electrocuted to death through his quadriceps, you know, how's that? You know, the fight scene on the boat when he escapes the auction house, you know, and he just, another one of my favorite scenes. Remember, he escaped from the pipe scene, and like that smarmy guy organized at the elevator, and he hears the gunshots, and he sees Liam Neeson coming out, and again, it's like a he's pooping his pants moment, right?
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's only business. Then blam, 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 empties it, done. You know, just refreshing in the fact that it's not trying to say anything except here's this man who you took the wrong guy's daughter. Right. Now you're going to effing pay for it, you know?
And that's what I was going to say was it exists in that very narrow subgenre of exactly that. You messed with the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And those movies always, if they're played straight ahead, they always work for me. Commando is that movie, and man, it works.
There you go, yes.
The Marine is that movie, and the Marine should absolutely suck because the actors aren't good. It's completely predictable. Man, I had a blast watching that movie because it's that. Man, you kidnapped the wrong dude's wife.
And yeah, I've only seen the Marine.
There's going to be explosions and there's going to be death. Yeah, the Marine too. But yeah. Not good, but the Marine.
All right.
Thoroughly entertaining. You know, not good, thoroughly entertaining.
I'll posit that the Marine 2 was not a great movie, but Ted DiBiase Jr. was a better leading man than
John Cena.
The other guy, than John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we're getting off track. just the pacing of it. I mean, it's not. I mean, Luc Besson kind of. It's weird because his stuff is really all over the place. You know, the District B13 movies, or whatever. They're kind of flashy in style, but then something like this comes along. You know, the Jet Li Unleashed movie, which I liked a lot. You know. You know, where they're just pretty, it's just, they're simple themes, simple concepts, buoyed by, you know, some great physical performances and just some awesome set pieces. It's just like, I just love how the whole movie was paced. It took a while to build. You got to know this guy. Brian, who Neeson pays, he seems like a pretty low key guy, right? Loves his daughter, you know, buys her a present. It kind of feels bad when the a-hole stepdad buys her a pony. So it's like, okay, so likable, sympathetic, you know, his friends trying to cheer him up. And then all of a sudden the switch turns and he's just the Terminator and the movie doesn't stop. You know, he flies over and it does not stop.
See, the other day, unlike Commando, it's, you know, I mean, Commando is great, but it's pure, total, utter, I mean, Schwarzenegger, none of us are Schwarzenegger, you know? But
right, that's true.
I think the gratifying thing about Taken is that, I mean, you guys both have daughters. I have a daughter. When she's 16 years old and something like that happens, we would turn into Liam Neeson.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I would be dead within 20 minutes, of course. But
you'd try. You'd still look very scary doing it.
And this gets into one of the themes of this countdown, which is what makes Liam Neeson badass in the movie is his total competence and professionalism. Like, he is just coldly skilled and professional in the movie. Even though he's driven by rage, essentially, and this desire to get his daughter back, all of that is bottled up and suppressed underneath just this enormous skill that he has and he brings to bear on it. And it's thoroughly enjoying.
Now, I reviewed the Blu-ray, and I'll quote a little bit of my review. Here's some whoring. I'm going to whore myself out here. But I said, thank you, writers, for not employing the most tired of action cliches and having Brian's CIA pals or even his ex-wife's husband behind all this. Another guy I thought would maybe pulling the strings, you know? I was waiting for that shoe to drop all the way to the end. I was so relieved that the bad guys were just that. Bad guys, total douchebags, engaged in appalling evil that deserved every bit of violence that was served to them. You know? There you go. Just simple, straightforward. I mean, and just to me, it just delivered just that kind of experience. Just a like an escapist kind of. Steve, you nailed it when you said, you know, so we're dads, right? You know, that kind of escapist fantasy for dad to get out there and dominate anyone who dared look at our daughter sideways.
Because that's the other kind of trick, almost cliche, that it plays so well. And it's the same thing we've talked about sudden death on this show. It's not part of the countdown, but same kind of thing where at the beginning of the movie, like the whole pony thing, there's a setup where on a certain level, Liam Neeson is kind of emasculated.
Right.
By, you know, the stepfather. Same thing with Van Damme in sudden death. So when, you know, he steps up and does what he has to do, it's just, you know, it again sort of reinforces, okay, here's the real man as opposed to the pony buying guy.
That's right. And he's not, again, something we push back against on this countdown is the idea that a husband slash father is adult, you know,
right.
You know, like they can't operate the walk without burning down half the city block. But, you know, obviously, right. You know, this
like,
guy,
look, he may not have the money to buy you a pony.
That's right.
But when you get kidnapped, by white slavery people,
right.
He will come after them and murder them mercilessly and get you back.
And which
is better.
Even his ex-wife, who questioned him a lot and, you know, took him to task and, you know, kind of emasculated him in front of his daughter, you know, kind of came around like, wow, you are a stud, aren't you? And, like, the stepdad just kind of looked like a wimp in comparison. So, yeah, fantastic. All right. And by the way, sudden death isn't part of this countdown, not because we don't like sudden death, but it's just so fantastic. It probably deserves its own countdown. So
yeah.
the top 20.
It could be numbers 20 through 1.
Yes, numbers 20 yeah. through 1. So we didn't want to make it unfair to everybody. but let's move along. So Taken, definitely one of my favorites. And just like a great little action movie that I love to pick up some time to time just to toss in, you know, because it's just so breezy. So, you know, just blast by, and it's just satisfying every time. But anyway.
Well, I know I'm going to have to watch it in
me
the
too.
Future here.
Absolutely. Now, number 7. Steve and I have maybe had our differences. You probably sensed a little tension when we were talking about James Cameron and Avatar. So that's a well-documented difference on some of these movies. But I think this movie, number 7, is something we can both enthusiastically connect on. And it occupies a pretty solid space in my top 5 favorite overall movies of all time, I think. And that is our number 7 pick, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, the Peter Weir movie with Russell Crowe. One of my absolute favorites of all time. But, Steve, I know you're enamored as well, so I'll let you kick things off. Master and Commander, why do you think it belongs on this list?
I'm right there with you. I gotta say, I go even higher with it. Every time I try to, you know, put together a top five, it's always the very first movie that comes into my head. Always. And then, like, with a bit more thought, I try to pick something a little older and put it above it or whatever, just, you know, out of my own consciousness. Like, okay, I really want to put Seven Samurai ahead of Master and Commander when I'm talking about my favorite movies of all time, but I can't because the movie just grabs me from that opening minute, you know, like when the bell rings on deck, you see someone flip over the little hourglass and I've got my surround sound cranked and it sounds like there's a, you know, creaking boards on the ceiling above me. And it's just from the moment the movie opens, it sucks you right into that place, that time and space.
And a small space.
Yeah, and it just, man, it holds you until the credits roll. And then when the credits roll, you just want it to keep going. You want to stay there. You want to be on that boat. You want to see all this stuff happen, you know? It's one of those movies that, I mean, you know, it's a boy's own story for sure, but it's so impeccably mounted, so well acted, so well directed. Sound design is probably the best I've ever heard in a film, you know? It's just, it's one of those movies that really grabs you, transports you to another place and just dumps you there, you know? There's no... It takes its time to unravel. It doesn't really, you know, yeah, it opens with a really great action sequence, but it doesn't depend on action and stuff to propel the story forward. It doesn't depend on set pieces. You know, it's just, it transports you to this time. It lets you observe what's going on. It really shows you better than, I think, any other movie set on a tall ship at sea how those times were, like how exactly these guys functioned as a, you know, like a military unit. And then, you know, it keeps you enamored with these characters until the final credits roll.
The action serves the story, not the other way around. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. You know,
which makes it more satisfying, actually.
Yeah, they didn't sit down. And I mean, I don't know, the original novels were, you know, I tried reading the first
two.
Yeah,
this is kind of a mismatch. I know this is like a mismatch.
It's like book one and book seven, I think. Yeah. But I tried reading them after seeing the movie, and I found them really dry. But the movie, man, I was just... It's one of those things, man. You know, it really sucked me to that other place. And every time I put it on, it doesn't matter what kind of a mood I'm in. That one movie, man, can totally captivate me for the 2.5 hours or so that it runs. And, you know, like I put it on to show off my surround sound system when someone comes in. You know, I was like, oh, check this out. You know, and he went, oh, what's it sound like? I put in Master and Commander. I crank the volume up a little bit and I can't stop until I've watched that entire movie, you know?
Now, Dan, I mean, we've talked about like the Expendables and, you know, other manly type of movies, but... This, you know, this may be one of the manliest movies ever made, you know. So
yeah, it's right up there.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
About the manliness?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking, you know, we talked about like the strong, you know, we're talking about like the criteria of this countdown, like these alpha males, you know, but you're talking like a ship full of these guys, you know, led by the alphaist of the alpha males.
Yeah, not just alpha male, but again, it's this almost like Howard Hawks way of approaching filmmaking where it's about men who are doing their jobs and doing them really well. Right. So even like the Paul Bettany character, who in a lesser movie would be kind of the wimp guy,
That's true.
Of the guy who gets, you know, brushed aside or they don't take seriously or whatever. I mean, he's still, within the context of the movie, a manly man because
he's
just damn good at what he does. Like everybody else, like Crow and all of them, they're good at what they do.
I love that you bring him up because, I mean, he's arguably just as important as Crow's character. You know, they really are set up as equals, even though they might have different approaches. And, you know, I think, you know, Bettany's more of the thinker and the diplomatic type. And, you know, but they really balance each other out and they kind of complement each other nicely. And even though Bettany might question, like, you know, question the wisdom of chasing after this huge different class ship. When push comes to shove and the swords come out, he's in there like one armed and all, swinging his sword and wiping out, you know, the French. Who, if there's one change that I can abide by changing source material, it's changing American bad guys to French bad guys.
Right.
So right. I am down with that change. So.
Right. And this is the movie. You know, there's a lot of movies, a lot of action movies, especially that depict kind of male camaraderie. And a lot of times it's just sort of humorous, like Predator. You know, it's not it's sort of cartoon version of it. But this is one of those movies that really gets it
right.
Well, gets it like it's authentic. The interplay between the characters and who they are, how they respond to each other, how they respect each other, even though they're different. Like
Crow
and Bettany are.
Yeah.
Right. They just, you know, they're working together, and the dialogue and the relationships are just really authentic throughout it.
It's very, you know, it's a movie that finds its core kind of in tradition. You know, it's like there's a strong tradition, you know, they all the men on the ship, they laud tradition, you know, they're very, you know, committed to that. So it's, they know that works and they know they'll survive by that, you know, and it really is their own little world in that boat. And I think, yeah. Steve, you nailed it when you said that, kind of transportive in that. Like my only, the faintest criticism I can come up with that is, and this is probably because it's kind of this collection of different elements of the books. Sometimes it feels a little episodic, you know, like, you know, it feels like we're here, we're here, we're here. I mean, all those episodes are very cool and satisfying. And then, but that's just like, I mean, I don't know if that's really a criticism because
I think it's a fair criticism.
I think that's just what happened. That's just a byproduct of combining different stories. Like,
you know, I think it's also a byproduct of trying to keep it under, you know, 4 hours.
Yeah, that's true. You know, hey,
which okay. I could go for 4 hours.
You were talking about
Seven Samurai, and I think there are some parallels. I, you know, as you can imagine, I wouldn't put it above Seven Samurai in a top five list, but I think there are some real similarities to the movies. And Seven Samurai runs about an hour longer, and I could go Master Commander an hour longer.
Oh, for sure.
3.5 hour movie would be awesome, as far as I'm concerned.
And you're right, fantastic ending, too. That, I guess, is a perfect ending. Open-ended, but... you know, just really encapsulates both characters. You're ending with both characters the way you kind of began. So,
yeah, and I mean, you know, like, what I like about the ending was kind of, it's almost like a setup for a sequel, but at the same time, you know, like they might end up chasing this other ship only to find that this guy who was posing as the doctor wound up, you know, dying himself, and Tom, his first mate, is running the other ship with no problems whatsoever.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
I mean, this guy did study under Lucky Jack Aubrey. I don't think some French ship captain is going to pull one over on him, you know?
And again, just to talk about the action, there is some excellent action. Like, really just, I get enhanced by the fact that it's not really built all around. I mean, you know you're going to get a great face-off. I mean, that looms throughout the whole film.
It does.
You'll know you'll get a payoff, so it's something you look forward to. But it's just, I mean, it's so expertly shot. I mean, it's so... you know, so fantastically shot and staged. Again, just, you know, this, you know, these two ships passing and exchanging the cannon fire, just, you know, just fantastic. And as much as I, you know, I like my Pirates of the Caribbean here and there. I mean, these were kind of in the same, were they kind of released in similar time frames? I don't know, you know.
I think Master Commander was like a year after the first
Pirates. Okay, so, you know, you know, I'll gladly take this realistic portrayal instead of having, you know, two guys shooting silverware and stuff at another one. So,
yeah.
You know, we're
cartoon versus a more realistic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
And I think the shame is that, I suspect that part of the reason Master and Commander didn't do well at the box office was the Pirates movies.
Pirates? I don't think it was
sort of like, you know, that probably a lot of people, a lot of casual viewers thought, you know, it looked derivative.
Yeah.
Or, you know, okay, well, you know, somebody's trying to cash in on the fact that the Pirates of the Caribbean movies are doing well, sort of thing. Plus, that title
is
unwieldy.
Yeah, and the I don't think the marketing was.
Yeah, the trailers were pretty horrible.
Yeah,
because it did not look good.
They were basically, I think, especially North America. I think Fox handled all the marketing in North America, and they threw it out there as almost like Gladiator at sea.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, they really put a lot of emphasis on Crow. And I mean, yeah, sure, Crow was your leading man. Crow was your Oscar winner and stuff like that. Paul Bettany, I mean, who really knew who Paul Bettany was?
Right.
You know?
That's true.
He was a right choice
for that.
Oh, a fantastic choice. But what I think is so brilliant about Crow in this movie, and I mean, it's one of the reasons why I dearly love Russell Crowe as an actor. You know, like, I'll watch anything Crow is in. He gives himself entirely to that role, man. You know, like, he is the only real... you know, marquee name in that movie, but he's right there on the deck with all the rest of them. You know, like, he's, you know, he's there with all of these other guys whose names you probably don't even know, or like, you know, was it Billy Boyd?
From
Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. You know, and Paul Bettany and all these other, like, all these other cats. He was, you know, he kind of set himself up as an equal. You can tell he wasn't mugging it for the camera. He wasn't kind of, you know, stealing scenes, and, you know, he was right there on deck with everybody else. You know, he put himself into that movie just as much as any of the rest.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's compelling about the Aubrey character. Even though he is as badass and awesome as a, you know, hero you'll find, and he is. I mean, he'll throw down when need be, and, you know, he's just steeped in honor. You know, he does have some, some flaws. You know, he doesn't like losing. You can tell that, which is
he's definitely got the hubris.
He does. He's got hubris, and he's vulnerable. You know, he loves the men who serve. I mean, and you could tell that. So it's not like a one dimensional performance at all. So you're right. He was. I think, even though I know it's typically looked at as a gold standard, I thought he was far more compelling here than even in Gladiator.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's a really great character because not only is he an action hero in the traditional sense, but he's just really smart. He's really good tactically.
Yes.
Obviously. And he knows, you know, he's realistic. He understands when he's outmatched. But he's still a stubborn bastard.
That's true.
He's still going to try to work his way through that tactically, you know, and there's something really compelling about that.
And it does a good job, too, exploring, like, friendship as well. Don't you think? I mean, I think, you know, you hear about bromance films tossed around or whatever, you know, and that just kind of becomes a joke. But, I mean, the relationship between he and Bettany's character, these two guys, I mean, that's obviously a friendship. They call each other on certain things. You know, they really compliment each other. And that's kind of interesting as well, you know, because obviously if you're in a boat in the middle of nowhere, you're going to have to make those connections somewhere. You know,
and you can tell that there's a history there with the two of those characters as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then finally, I just have to lament the very substandard Blu-ray that came out for this film. So we'll see if we ever get something. I mean, the sound work was okay, but just I thought it was a disappointing Blu-ray. So hopefully we'll get a release. Even now, it seems like it's underappreciated. So hopefully we'll get a hype.
It's like a big three disc.
Well, there was an existing special edition, right? And I don't think it got any of those extras.
Sound on the Blu-ray is fantastic.
The sound is, but I thought the picture and the extras were disappointing, unfortunately. So
the general lack of any kind of substance was, you know, I mean, if there's anything that deserves a big three disc collector's edition, it's this one, right?
You're telling me there's not a director's cut out there you can explore and not delete?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of footage, man. I'm sure that movie was like the original cut of that movie definitely wasn't 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, I think, but I don't know.
What needs to happen is Ridley Scott needs to get on the phone with Peter Weir and say, "Look, this is how you work these things."
Right.
Explain to him how you release big, you know, director's cuts of your thing.
Or even James Cameron. How about that, Steve? Let's get James Cameron there.
Well, I prefer you give it to Ridley Scott than James Cameron, but hey.
We could have maybe we get Master Commander in 3D, you know. The Weevils coming right at your face or something. So anyway,
Scott at least has the experience of, you know, creating it totally, and this will be getting off field too, but you know, essentially creating a totally different movie.
That's true.
In his, you know, Kingdom of Heaven, I get the theatrical version. I
forgettable.
Slit my wrist before watching that again, but the director's cut is, you know, a totally different movie.
Or the director's cut is live for me.
Let's bring those two together pronto. You know.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, I think that is it for our numbers 8 and 7. Two movies that I love dearly, and I want to watch in tandem right now. You know, yeah. we should get you know, Liam Neeson's character from Taken, put him on the ship, you know, put on the ship and let him just like kick ass like crazy.
Put him on the French privateer with a rapier in his hand.
That's right. Just let him loose. Say these guys took your daughter. Just drop him off and just let him go nuts.
I have a particular set of skills.
putting guys' heads in cannons and just, yeah, fantastic. All right, well, two very different movies, but equally fantastic. And again, we're at the top six now. The daylight is ahead. But if you thought these were badass, boy, we've got even more lying in wait. So thank you for checking in with us. As always, you can find out all our back episodes of all of Objection. At DVDverdict.com. You know, give the old white men cabal some love by checking out their Facebook page as well. So,
yes.
So, Dan Mancini, is there anything else that needs to be said?
Thanks. 10 points easy.